This is a collage of pictures that we've taken with various of our planetary spacecraft. You'll notice that Pluto is conspicuously absent in this. We're working on that. We have plans for a mission that will launch in 2005, take somewhere between 12 to 15 years to get to Pluto. So sooner or later, we'll be able to complete this. It isn't likely to be soon enough that I'll be up here talking to you about it someday, but we do hope to finish that part of it. This is a comparison of Earth and Jupiter to give you some feel for how different they are. This is obviously not a photograph. This is a paste-up, but it shows Jupiter and Earth to the same scale. It would take a little over 1,300 Earths to equal the volume of Jupiter. It would take about 6 Earths to entirely cover the red spot, which you can just can make out over there. This one gives you a comparison of the size of the 4 inner planets, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, and the 6 largest moons in the solar system. Spacecraft and what it has done and is still today doing out here exploring this system. We have 3 principal objectives with Galileo at Jupiter. One is to evaluate the atmosphere. Another is to evaluate the magnetosphere, which is the largest structure in the solar system and is the magnetic field lines of Jupiter as pushed back in this direction by the solar wind coming out. And then the third objective is to investigate the satellites, understand their chemical composition, their physical properties, and their internal structure. This is a picture of the Galileo spacecraft as it was sitting down at Cape Canaveral being assembled and ready to be put on top of the upper stage. You can get an idea of the scale by the men working, standing down there at the bottom. From bottom to up to the top of the tip is just over 6 meters. This thing sticking up here in the middle. This is the high gain antenna. It had to be furled in order to fit into the cargo bay of the shuttle. And as you may know, it never did properly open. So we had to make a number of modifications, including reprogramming all of the onboard flight software in order to be able to get the data back over the low gain antenna. We didn't get near the volume of data that we would have gotten over the high gain antenna, but in terms of the information content, we estimate that we returned probably something over 70% of the information that we had hoped to accomplish. It worked out rather remarkably and better than I think any of us dared hope at the time we realized we were going to have to undertake that endeavor. This is a sketch of the spacecraft in a little more detail. This long boom extending up here to the right holds some plasma wave antennas and the magnet. You will see. Yes, right here.
Why does it look like, why does
it
represent space flight over lines and stuff?
It's the way the lava flows and just levels out and makes it look smooth. Now, the extent to which there really is a gradient, I don't know. But
I'm looking at the lines, like skaters skating
away. Oh, you're talking about on Io or Europa?
Europa.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What we think has happened is that the ice has fractured.
Sure, sir.
Okay. We think the question is, why does Europa have all of these lines? One picture I showed you, but just fractured, and then water and mineral salts came up through when that happened and then refroze. That's what we believe caused those lines. Okay, if there's any other questions, I can't see you, so you're just going to have to speak up. Yes, one back here.
Could you give us an idea of the gravity of Jupiter compared to Earth and also the equipment?
Okay. The gravity of Jupiter relative to Earth, I have known that number and it escapes me at the moment. It's, to give you a qualitative answer, lots bigger. With regard to the probe, it never got down to any kind of surface to maneuver on. It was strictly an atmospheric probe, and it descended to the point where the temperature and the pressure caused it to quit functioning. It transmitted signals to the orbiter for 57 minutes, and that was roughly what we had expected. We listened for 75 just to be sure that we wouldn't lose anything. And finally, the temperatures and pressures caused it to just quit functioning, and then eventually it just vaporized into nothing. But during the time that it was descending, it was in free fall, so except for the drag, so that the gravity was not a factor. The main place where gravity was a threat was that it, on approach, by the time it got to entry, Jupiter's gravity had accelerated it to the point that the entry speed was about 48 kilometers per second. So it was the fastest ever entry and a very difficult one. Now, if you relate that to your experience with Earth entries, it doesn't apply directly because the molecular weight of Jupiter's atmosphere is considerably less than that of Earth's. 48 kilometer per second entry at Earth never would work. Okay, anything else? The question is about the extended mission, and I think what you want to know is what's going to cause it to quit. Yeah, right. This gentleman's got one key thing, is money. In terms of technical issues, the radiation exposure to the spacecraft is increasing well beyond what we built it for. We designed it to survive the 11 orbit mission, and that meant it would survive about 150 kilorads of radiation. We currently are at about 200, and by the time we get to the end of the current nominal extended mission, we'll be at about 375 kilorads. We have ample propellant. Money is getting in kind of short supply. We have seen some effects that we attribute to radiation, but nothing that has kept it from performing more or less nominally. So we are guardedly optimistic that it's going to get through both of the Io encounters. But by the time we get there, we're down to a perigeu radius of about 5.5 Jupiter radii, and it's getting pretty warm. So there aren't any guarantees that it's going to make it. We're just going to keep going as long as it'll last.
Well, thank you, Dr. Robert Mitchell, for telling